Apollo missions 18, 19, and 20 were canceled.
17, Houston, you are go for orbit, go for orbit.
We knew that Apollo 17 was the end of Apollo. The press would never forget it. They kept saying, how does it feel to be the tail of the dog, or how does it feel to be part of the end? And, you know, guys were losing their jobs as a result of Apollo. As soon as we lifted off, all the Grumman crew got their pink slips.
To stop it now just didn't make any sense.
Historians will look back on this program and wonder why the United States, at the height of its technological achievement, just quit.
Sure, I knew that I would be the last man of Apollo to walk on the moon, and it might be as long as 10 or 15 or 20 years. But truly, when I left the surface, I believed then, and I believe now, someone will be back someday.
Bob, this is Gene, and I'm on the surface. And as I take man's last step from the surface, back home for some time to come, but we believe not too long into the future, I'd like to just let what I believe history will record, that America's challenge of today has forged man's destiny of tomorrow. And as we leave the moon and Taurus Littoral, we leave as we came, and God willing, as we shall return with peace and hope for all mankind. Godspeed the crew of Apollo 17.
Roger, Gino. Thank you very much.
Those were the last official words spoken on the moon.
Now, the unofficial words are about 10 seconds before Jack Schmidt and I lifted off, and I just looked over at Jack and I said, Jack, let's get this mother out of here.
99, proceeded, 3, 2, 1, ignition.
Burn away, Houston.
Vector good. Exhaust. Take over.
Roger, you have good thrust.
130 Houston, we're in the blind and we'll go.
Roger, we'd like the eggs to auto. Challenger Houston, we'd like to terminate ascent feed now.
Okay. Hey Houston, 540 Challenger's coming through 52K, and Ping says 126 on the H-stack. We're go.
Planet closing at 5 feet per second, 440 feet.
Okay. Good to have you all back up here.
Columbia now passing over Australia. Landing expected at Kennedy Space Center at about 7:10 a.m. Central Time this morning. Weather in the area reported to be good. Approaches flown in the shuttle training aircraft by astronaut Hoot Gibson. Reports recently that the skies are clear, 7 miles plus visibility, light winds. No concern for crosswinds on this first landing.
The shuttle is a difficult aircraft to fly. It doesn't have engines when it comes back to Earth. It has a very, what we call, high wing loading. It has the short, stubby wings, and I guess you could say it is a low lift to drag ratio. It sinks like a brick.
And it was watched with considerable amusement by members of the aeronautical fraternity, who called it the flying brickyard because it had the aerodynamic characteristics of a pair of pliers. And in fact, many people expected that if the shuttle were going to have an accident, it would be on landing because its flying characteristics were practically nil. It sort of lands in a controlled crash.
The big surprise is the sonic booms. The thing announces its arrival with this boom, boom sound of the leading edge of the wing and the tail breaking the sound barrier.
Journey, the space shuttle is coming home. The commander has to make a perfect landing now. He has no engines to take him around again.
Boy, I tell you, that's a good one. Yeah, looking good. Okay. Right. Okay, got him. How do we get? Here he is on the shuttle right. 400. 300 out. Here's coming. 100, 255.
Here's that.
50 feet at 240. 30 feet at 235. 20 feet at 225. 10 feet at 220. 8 feet at 215. 5 feet at 210. 2 feet at 200. 1 foot.
Down.
195. 170. 165. 160. 150. 90 at 5. 70 at 5. 50 knots. 5 deceleration.
Here in the middle of a Florida wildlife refuge, the shuttles land. They are serviced and are launched again.
Okay, Houston, wheels are stopped.
Way to go, boys.
The thing is full of all kinds of toxic stuff from its on-orbit propellant system. So you see these trucks go out to so-called safe the orbiter, and that's making sure that none of these fumes are loose or can affect the ground crew or the astronauts as they debark.
Then she rolls out of the orbiter processing facility. We take it to the VAB, which is the vehicle assembly building, the big building.
And then it's brought to this 48-story immense modern cathedral that was designed for the Saturn V rocket, which was much bigger than the shuttle stack.
We'll be right back.
and then it's taken with a crane and grabbed by the nose and hauled vertical and then moved over and mated with its external tank, its expendable fuel tank, and the solid rockets, which themselves have been prepared for several months for this mating. Although it appears we go overboard in some cases and things do seem to be laborious, there is a lot of thought process put into that. You know, the old carpenter saw, you know, you measure twice and cut once.
Carrying about $3 billion worth of national assets, you know, here on our shoulders, you know, while we're going to the pad, it's pretty mind-boggling. But to me, the more incredible part about the crawler is when you do dock it up at the pad, the accuracy is down to a 16th of an inch that we can stop the crawler at, north, south, east, and west. So even though she may be a clumsy beast, she can really put it on a dime. Rolling about a mile an hour at this time. We have about an hour and a half left to go to get to the top of the pad. And Hans is running pretty good. I started calling him Hans and Franz after Beastie Boys, and that's where we got it from, was from a Saturday Night Live clip that used to have characters on it called Hans and Franz, and they were here to pump you up. And that's what we do. When we developed the shuttle, we used the old facilities that had been created for Apollo and adapted them for shuttle. It's very much a cobbling together of budget-driven design compromises that we see.
It was a learning process of old technology and new technology put together to try to define and place how we can go on from here to do it more efficiently.
There are something like 30,000 people involved in getting a shuttle ready for launch and launching it. That's no way to make it cheap. The idea that we could have done that somehow for $10 million a throw just boggles the mind when you see what actually happens.
NASA was given a very difficult job. And technically, NASA performed. The shuttle is too expensive to operate. We've got to find much faster, cheaper ways of doing it.
As the time for launch approaches, things get more critical. My mind is reviewing all the things that could be trouble spots. Did we cover everything adequately? Did we check everything? Did we watch everything? Are we really ready? The bottom line is we cannot afford another Challenger accident.
It's an incredibly dangerous business. You're turning loose so much energy in such a short period of time. You're using such sophisticated techniques and procedures and equipment. We're going to lose people. We're going to lose more people. I think it's only through the dedication of all the fine folks who work in this business we haven't lost more already.
Personally, on that day, I was sitting next to the person who had the responsibility for launch director. and we saw the Challenger destruct in front of us. And it's a moment that those on the team and those that saw it, of course, will never forget.
I was in my boss's office. We gravitate to some place where there's a television when it finally comes down to the last few minutes of the count. And we were sitting there watching many secretaries and other people in the room at the same time. And when the spacecraft disappeared in the explosion, of course, nobody knew for sure what happened. But they were saying, oh, the SRBs have separated, you know. And at that moment, you could see a couple of SRBs wandering off on their own. And my boss and I looked at each other, you know, and there was no word spoken. I mean, we just knew that we were in deep trouble, that that crew was gone.
I watched the ascent. I saw the fireball. I screamed, please return to the launch site. I ran to the TV set. I turned the TV set on and waited with the rest of the country.
The system, the people in the system, understood that we had a problem in the design of the O-rings, that a potential could occur for a loss of the vehicle due to burn through of the casing. But somehow we were unable to work the system properly to get those answers out so that we could take effective action. And so it was a human failure.
Films told us that the crew module came out more or less intact. We didn't get enough detail to determine what kind of intactness there was. For example, if the crew was still conscious or not conscious, able to make radio calls or not. That part we never really did determine. But we did not expect to see the crew module come out as one piece and being able to track it for some distance.
We've loaded the tank and we're replenishing it, keeping up with what we call the heat leak, because it's not a perfect thermos bottle. So we have to keep adding a couple hundred gallons a minute of hydrogen and oxygen to the tank.
This is shuttle launch control of T-minus 3 hours and holding. Crew preparing to have the mission cape with the STS-59 mission emblem on it.
Strange thing. You do all this sophisticated training, you have all these people who do all this high-tech preparation, but it really does come down to a few people who take you in a bus out to the launch pad. They do strap you into this vehicle, and then you know that anybody in their right mind gets way the hell back away from this thing, at least 3 miles, and leaves you alone out there with all of this high explosives, and makes you think very hard about doing this job.
Now on the way to launch pad 39A.
There is a ceremony, and I think it's a ceremony that we need as human beings. So we need ceremony, and I think in this case, these are emissaries that we're sending out into space.
Yeah, well, and the excitement in the bus kind of builds, too, as we're coming down. I can remember going out and people saying, okay, one more corner. Oh, you know, look at that. Isn't it marvelous? Normally, you're used to arriving at the pad and finding all these workers, you know, scurrying all over the place, readying the vehicle for flight or readying the pad. And suddenly, you get out there, and there's just the six of you on the crew and the six members of the team that are going to help strap you in and do the final hatch closing. And that's it. It's the only human beings out there in this big, beautiful rocket ship.
strikes me as a living, breathing entity. It makes sound. There is the hissing of purge gases escaping, the popping of valves opening and closing, the rumble of the burn stack as we burn off the excess hydrogen. And so you get this impression that it is ready to go, and it's catching its breath, waiting to jump off the pad. Got 2 hours to look at every square inch on this vehicle and pronounce it ready for launch. We are well aware that there's over 2 million pounds of solid rocket fuel in the boosters and over 500,000 gallons of cryogenic fuel in the external tank. So it is a hazardous operation. There is potential for major problems there should anything ever occur. So all the team members are volunteers.
We're at the 195-foot level of the tower. The crew module's right here. The external tank is not more than 20 feet to this side, and there's a solid rocket booster that's loaded and ready to go that's right next to it. So we're right in the middle of it. Although that's full, and we've got about 1 million gallons of liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen right there ready to go. So you're one of a dozen people that... You're out here, and everybody else is 4 miles away.
OTC Endeavor. Go ahead. Yeah, we'd like to confirm with Houston that RTLS is not at any point. And runway 366.
This is Shuttle Launch Control at T-minus 2 hours, 6 minutes. Mission Specialist Tom Jones is now being prepared for boarding Endeavor.
At this point, you're kind of numb to the whole thing, I think. You're just excited a bit and looking forward to getting in and strapped in and settled down. It's a bit uncomfortable like this. Kind of laying on some valves on the back of the suit. But it's not too bad for the first hour and a half or two. As you approach a little after that, you start getting a little uncomfortable with sometimes back pain. So the quickest way to get comfortable is to launch, you know. If you scrub, it takes about 40 minutes to get back out here and open the hatch and take you back. But if you launch, it's only 8.5 minutes to 0G, so that's the most comfortable end of the deal.
OVCC, OVC. Go ahead. Yeah, we'd like you to turn the portable O2 back on. Copy.
Well, I'm Bob Seek. I'm the launch director for the space shuttle. My responsibility is to make sure that we don't get launch fever. We don't get carried away. In this pyramid of reaching the final go for launch, everyone is polled where they have to indicate that they are really go to proceed. If I'm comfortable that there's nothing out there that's bugging anybody, then it's fairly easy to give the go-ahead to launch.
My name is Al Sofchi. I'm the shuttle test director at Kennedy Space Center, and my prime function is to lead the launch team on during the launch countdown process, which starts 3.5 days before the actual liftoff. The final hours of launch start approximately 8 to 10 hours before launch, and we come in, we check the weather, make sure we have good weather, we check with all of our systems and all of our support areas around the world and make sure that no one has a problem that would prevent us from tanking or launching.
APU hydraulic slip chart recorders.
Recorders are running.
And PLT OTC. APU pre-start.
APU pre-start in warp. OTC PLT, APU pre-start complete. Great talkbacks on 1 and 3. Barber pulled on 2.
Thank you. 3, 2, 1, mark. PLS is go for orbiter. APU start.
PLT OTC. APU start at this time.
Roger, APU start.
And CDR OTC.
Roberts and OTC for the PLT and the CDR. APU starts complete, three good APUs, and the heater reconfigures complete.
Copy that, thank you.
Come on, baby.
Yeah, let's just go for purge sequence 4.
A final purge of the main engines is underway. To prepare the engines for start at the 1 minute point in the count, an engine ready indication will be given. We're now transferring to internal power and switching off the orbiter's ground power supply. At this point, Discovery is being powered by its onboard fuel cells. All systems are go for launch at this time.
3 minutes of counting.
CLS
is go for ETLO2 pressurization.
PLT, OTC.
Go ahead.
Clear caution and warning memory and verify no unexpected errors. PLT, right now. OTC, PLT, caution warning clear.
Copy that, and flight crew OTC. Close and lock visors, initiate O2 flow, and have a good flight.
Countdown clock will hold at T-minus 31 seconds due to a failure.
And the countdown clock will hold at T-minus 31 seconds due to a failure. We don't have any word at this point.
On the orbiter payload interface and duct pressures.
FPVD.
FPVD. Two measurements just came back within LTC range.
An MTD SPE, they're back within limits, and we recommend clearance. All right, copy, launch truck.
And the reason for the excursion was what?
CPVD.
CPVD.
Yeah, can you give a reason for why it skirted out of the range?
I really don't know. They went down again. Our flow valve is cycling, open and closed.
How far out of range is it going? Do you have any idea? The low limit's pointy, and it's going down to 18 inches of water.
Here's there's a problem with the orbiter to payload interface ducts. We're discussing that right now.
Yes, it appears to be our flow control valve.
T-minus 31 seconds and holding.
It was stable after we did our payload bay reduction. It was just fine, and then it started cycling low.
As you feel, you can meet the minimum limits if we continue on either successfully or have to scrub.
No, I think we can, it's cycling in and out. If it stays up, we can try to control the valve manually and bring it up to the highest range.
Okay, copy. SPE, do you have any problem with proceeding?
Well, I'll need to mask them out back here because it is cycling. And as soon as we get that done, I think we can handle it manually.
Okay.
Launch director, engineering director.
Go ahead.
31 seconds from now, we will have zero purge, you understand?
I understand. Okay, well, SPE, TLS, you go ahead with your software configuration and let us know.
That is complete. We're standing by.
Okay, MTD?
MTD.
DVD, are you go to proceed? DVD, launch director.
DVD.
Are you go to proceed?
Yes, I recommend go.
Copy, NTD, you have a go to proceed.
TLS, pick up the calendar, your mark.
3, 2, 1, mark.
T-minus 31 seconds.
Believe it or not, I'm not a risk taker, and so I try to minimize risk, and I look upon launch as one of the riskier parts of space flight. Maybe in the future you'll be able to beam me up there, you know, beam me up there, Scotty, and I would accept that.
The count goes down. You hear T-minus 31 seconds. The onboard computers kick on. You start to get a rush.
The last few seconds, the launch count, there's a lot of dynamic things occurring on the shuttle. Things are powering up, pumps, engines.
You hear the engines kick on. You can see the large steam cloud rise. And then you hold your breath for a few seconds, praying that those solid rocket motors were going to go.
And that 6 seconds seemed to last for an eternity because the vibration was so high, you could feel the shuttle just straining against the launch pad. You think it's going to shake itself. Hurry up and light, solid rocket motors. Come on, let's go. And then bang, at zero when the solids light.
When those kick on, you're going to go somewhere. The shuttle will not stay at the pad.
Powers the thing is the absolute feeling
the love that the people have here at the center, from the people that work with the wrench to the people that work with the paper, the people that really feel like they're almost physically pushing it off the pad, and their hearts go with it every time. And it's as if it's an absolute member of their family, if not a part of their being.
Vibration was so tremendous inside the cockpit that those gauges kind of blurred. It was like, well, it's a good thing I've trained so long to study these gauges, so I can't read them now.
Negative return.
In the space of about a minute and 45 seconds, we're traveling faster than the fastest rifle bullet. We're above Mach 3.
Two-engine bin.
What will we do if we lose an engine at this point? Will we return to Kennedy, or will we continue to Africa? Or we go to Spain, or, you know, will we have to dump fuel from our orbital maneuvering engines if we lose an engine at this point, or not dump fuel? What orbit will we go to? You know, so there's all these things that you have to be staying ahead of the vehicle on, thinking, if the next malfunction occurs, what do I do?
After 2 minutes and 12 seconds, you're off the solids and you're onto the main engines. That's a smooth ride.
It is a bit of a relief to know that they're gone. And you figure that the main engines have been working just fine for 2 minutes, no reason they shouldn't for another six. So you're feeling pretty good at that point.
Press to Miko.
Press to Miko.
It takes approximately 8.5 minutes of powered flight from liftoff at the pad until you're going 17,500 miles an hour. When you're on board, that's a very exciting ride, goes by very quickly. When you're sitting in a management position, that is the longest 8.5 minutes in the world.
Single engine press 104.
I said, Ellen, I can actually see the sky turning black. And Ellen said, great. And Don said, what are the engines doing? And I came back in and I looked and I said, Don, the engines are great. Ellen, I can st- it's really black now, because I was so excited.
You know, MECO is a NASA acronym for main engine cutoff. MECO, main engine cutoff. So you always hear MECO, and there's great smiles go up in MECO, particularly if it's a safe MECO.
Closing my eyes just as the engine shut down, I was, of course, in free fall. It's rather abrupt from having a 3G push in which you weigh three times. I weigh roughly 460 pounds or so, to 0G into free fall. Just a magical experience.
It's euphoria on board. It's euphoric. There's just the whole crew who lets up a cheer. I'm not sure if it's an unspoken thought in everybody's mind or just sheer joy of being there, but it's certainly a little bit of both. We're alive and we're in orbit. What could be better?
It's an archetypal dream of human flight. You know, we as humans, for as long as we've been humans, have thought about doing that.